Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is TWiT Photo with Catherine Hall and Leo Laporte. Episode 46, recorded February 28th, 2012. Is technology a menace to photography? TWiT Photo is brought to you by Ford, featuring the Ford EcoBoost engine with turbocharger and direct injection. Look for the EcoBoost on the 2012 Explorer and Edge, the 2013 Escape, and at Ford.com/technology. Hello, everybody, and welcome to TWiT Photo with Catherine Hall, a kind of a different show today. Catherine Hall is, of course, the host of TWiT Photo and one of the best photographers in the world. You can see more of her photographs at CatherineHall.net. And as always, Catherine has postings on her blog with her photo of the week and photo tips of the week. So I encourage you to visit there. In fact, if you go to Catherine Hall's blog today, you'll see that she was at the WPPI conference, which is the Wedding and Portrait Photographers Association, and did a seminar, a panel, I guess would be a better way to describe it, titled, Is Technology a Menace to Photography? So what we're going to do for this episode of TWiT Photo is show you in its entirety, raw and uncut, that panel featuring an amazing group of photographers. I've got it up right here, Eileen. Dane Sanders, Greg Gibson, Lindsay Adler, Cliff Mautner, Jeremy Cowart. We've had him on the show before. Sue Bryce, Jerry Guionis. We just had him on last week. And, of course, the wonderful Tamara Lackey. Is technology a menace to photography? We're going to take a look at that in just a moment. This portion, in fact, the entire show brought to you, of course, by our friends at Ford, the makers of the Ford EcoBoost engine. What an amazing thing Ford is doing here. You understand that it's a challenge in the 21st century to be a modern car company. On the one hand, you've got rising gas prices and government initiatives that say you've got to reduce emissions. On the other hand, you want customers who want powerful engines. A great solution from Ford. Of course, they've got electric, hybrid electric, plug-in hybrid, but they also have the EcoBoost engine. If you're running on gasoline, this is amazing. It's a way to get all the power of a bigger engine and all the economy of a smaller engine. You can learn more at Ford.com/technology. A couple of the technologies is actually quite a sophisticated bunch of technologies, but a couple of the technologies they use, a direct injection, which produces a cooler, denser charge. It generates more power per drop of fuel, and it's turbocharged. Now, you may say, oh, that turbocharged lag. Well, they've done something smart. Instead of one big turbocharger, they've got two smaller turbines. They're powered by the gas's exhaust, engine energy that would otherwise be wasted. Those turbine wheels compress the air going into the cylinder, and that significantly increases the output per liter of displacement. That means you can get a 2-liter engine with the performance of a smaller engine and the power and torque and responsiveness of a bigger engine. In fact, take a look at the 2012 Explorer with a class-leading highway fuel economy from the EPA of 28 highway miles per gallon. That's on that 2.0-liter EcoBoost engine. For large utilities, that's amazing. The 2012 Explorer and the 2012 Edge are out now. The 2013 Escape comes out in just a few weeks, and that's going to offer a 1.6-liter for even better gas mileage and a 2-liter EcoBoost option. Best way to find out about the EcoBoost engine, of course, visit the website. You know, I'm not an expert on these things, but they talk about it and they tell you exactly how it works. Visit Ford.com/technology and then go to a Ford dealer and drive one today. Ford is a 21st century car company leading the way with technology to make their cars better performing and better fuel economy. Pretty amazing. Ford.com/technology. We thank them for their support. Now we take you to the Wedding and Portrait Photographers International Show, WPPI, in Las Vegas, Nevada, where Catherine Hall is about to lead her panel, Is Technology Bad for Photography? A Menace. Let's find out.
Hi, this is Catherine Hall with TWiT Photo, and we're here today in Vegas. And we have a great group of panelists with us, a ton of luminaries that are here at the convention that have offered to be here. I want to thank you all. We're going to start going down the row with introductions, starting with Miss Lindsay Adler.
All right. I'm Lindsay Adler. I'm a portrait and fashion photographer based in New York. So I shoot everything from fashion editorials to campaigns. And I'm also an author and a teacher like all these other great people here.
My name is Dane Sanders. I have a bubble in my mouth. And I'm a photographer out of Newport Beach, California. I've written a couple books, and I'm really privileged to be with these group of people.
Hi, Twit viewers. My name's Sue Bryce. I've been a portrait photographer for 22 years, and I'm from Sydney, Australia.
Hello, my name is Jeremy Cowart. I'm a celebrity portrait photographer based out of Los Angeles, and I founded a nonprofit called Help Portrait, and I, despite what most people think, I'm also the founder of the Ice Light.
So does that mean that you think you're famous?
Because I'm a celebrity. Yeah, I love that. No, definitely
not. He photographs celebrities. Yes. He doesn't think of himself as a celebrity photographer.
Exactly.
However, some might differ, like myself.
Hi, I'm Jerry Gionis. I have not written any books. I didn't found the Help Portrait, but I am a photographer from Australia. I also live in the US, which is fun now. I'm a resident. I'm here to help. Thank you so much. And I'm here to have some fun and introduce the great Miss Tamara Leckie.
Can you do it for me?
Yes, I can hold it for you.
No. Can you do the introduction?
Like I'm talking like
what my
like
name
I
is.
I could do Tamara.
Tamara Leckie. Do you have a middle name? Amazing photographer, author, mother of like three wonderful children who don't come to my house and don't mess it up and don't make me really tired and not want to have kids forever, Miss Tamara Leckie.
And that was perfect. Yeah, your turn.
Hello, everyone. My name is Greg Gibson. I'm a photographer from Washington, D.C. My background is journalism. I worked in the news business for about 20 years, and now I'm just a lowly wedding photographer like the rest of these guys.
Unfortunately, I'm a friend of Greg Gibson's. My name is Cliff Mountner, and this is my 30th year in professional photography. I'm only 34 years old. I was a photojournalist with the Philadelphia Inquirer 15 years, and I've shot about 800 weddings since I left the Philadelphia Inquirer in 98. And I run this little thing called the Lighting and Skill Set Boot Camp out of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. I'm very proud of it. Great to be here.
How many assignments did you shoot for the Philadelphia Inquirer?
6,000. Okay. Somewhere in that neighborhood. Inside joke.
We don't need to get it. It's okay. And I'm Catherine Hall, and I'm the host of Twit Furter. We're off to a great start. No, I'm just kidding. I am the host of Twit Photo, and I'm also the creator of Top Model Release. That was actually named by the genius sitting next to me here.
Stop it.
And today our topic is going to be, is technology a menace to photography?
Dun, 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 dun.
Dun, 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 dun. And many of you might think, how is that possibly a point of discussion? And I think you might be surprised by what we have today. So I'm going to start off with Lindsay. How has technology affected you in photography?
Okay, so I'm just going to start off by saying that technology, really when I started photography, it was when everything was changing. And it was really interesting because when I first was considering it as a career, a lot of the people that were in photography, so I was like 15, 16, everybody's telling me everything's changing, it's horrible, don't become a photographer, you can't make money, everybody's picking up a camera, taking over what we're doing, don't do it. And it was a downer. I mean, this is what I wanted to do with my life for my career. But for me, it makes my life easier. It helps me express myself better. It creates new tools. It helps me market myself. So technology plays an important role in every single aspect of my photography. And I actually don't know any different. That's been essential to my entire career.
So then we'll go to you, Greg, growing up with film. How has the transition affected you?
Well, I mean, you could say you could just ask Kodak, you know, if technology is a menace to photography, because obviously Kodak is feeling the effects of the digital revolution. I mean, Kodak basically invented digital photography, and now it has killed off their core product. and the core product doesn't exist. And so the bottom line with any technology and in any business is that you have to evolve. And so that's always been the key. You know, as new things come about, new technologies come about, new media comes about, you have to evolve with it. And the people that evolve are going to be the people that survive in the long run.
And Sue, you have a personal experience with this in your family growing up as a traditional retoucher before Photoshop.
Yeah, I actually worked for Kodak, and I worked as a professional retoucher on film and dye blending and negative retouching, and we lost our jobs to Photoshop. So I like the Darwinism that the strongest species, or the one that survives, is not the most intelligent or the strongest, but the one that is most susceptible to change. And I think anybody who evolves in this industry will survive, but it has been the hardest 20 years growing up in an industry that I've ever experienced.
What's been the most hard part?
I think learning how to use a computer was really difficult. 20 years ago, when I trialed the first version of Photoshop, I did everything Photoshop does by hand, and I didn't even have an email address. So I, you know, my mum at the time was running an entire art room that serviced 385 professionals, and she can't use a computer like I could because I was only 22. So I picked it up easily, and she lost her job. So we just keep, I kept moving and she didn't. So
do you think, okay, so we have, I have the new 4S. Yes. And each, the camera technology is getting better and better and better. And are point and shoots obsolete at this point? What do you guys think? Jerry?
You know what? I think if it takes, it takes a good eye. It takes a good eye, a good eye for composition to get a great shot, no matter what it is. I don't think it's at the end of the point and shoot, but I think that, I mean, the iPhone can do everything. It's ridiculous. It's funny, just recently, and you may have judged this actually, I submitted a whole wedding in the wedding album competition here at WPPI, shot on the iPhone, and it scored an 85.
Wow.
And it came fourth, I believe. So I did it as an exercise to prove to my students and who I teach that it's the eye. And it's the idea of composition and storytelling that really gets the shot. So now I'm not encouraging everyone out there to go shoot a wedding with an iPhone, for goodness sake. The funny thing was, on the wedding day, I was there on my there in the wedding shooting the ceremony, and I'd shoot the shot with a big camera, and every so often I'd just do this. And then you could see people looking at me like I was a freak. And then people went up to the groom later on and said, "You really splurged on your photographer, you know, didn't you?" Because I was shooting with the iPhone. And it was amazing. I was doing motor drive. But it was funny. So I don't think it's, I think it's, they're going to phase out. I think for me, us, for example, we have the iPhone. We don't need anything else, you know, for our fun shots. What I believe, though, in the digital revolution here is that it's made us lazy. As photographers, and I know you guys feel the same way, we grew up with film, with medium format. I've shot a whole wedding on transparency with great exposures all around. The new generation, everything, it's almost, you know what, shoot raw, over and underexpose by two stops, do what you want in Photoshop, slap a filter, slap a texture on there, and it'll be okay. And I think the new generation is making it okay to do poor photography. And I'm very passionate about that. I think that, you know, we're encouraged almost to do bad photography. And you might say, well, how is that? I believe that there are, social media has affected this industry in a way where anyone can have an audience. In other words, there can be a person who's great at Twitter, great at Facebook, Google Plus, Instagram, you name it. There's all these programs out there. So you can get a following very quickly. And your audience can give you pride that you know what you're doing, we're going to learn from you. And these people, some of these people don't know what they're doing. So what's happening is it's giving permission to the new generation to look at these people as heroes. And you know what? I can photograph like you. Bad composition, bad lighting, no storytelling. Let's shoot tabletops and chairs and all that kind of stuff. And what's happened is, unfortunately, it's watered down the true craft of photography, which is lighting, which is posing, which is storytelling, which is capturing moments, which is creating moments. And unfortunately, it's lazy. And we think the answer is Photoshop. We think the answer is filters. And the answer is craft. The answer is understanding the story and all that kind of thing. So, you know, I think at times it can be a menace, and at times it can be a true blessing. It just depends on which side of the fence you're on that particular day.
But fortunately, there is no unsuck filter in Photoshop yet. Mm. Okay?
Yeah, no, actually, this is something I really want to touch on, because for me, that's been the biggest difference I've seen. As ISOs go up, lighting has become less and less important. And lighting is not about
exposure. Well, but you mean perception of lighting is becoming less and less important. Is that what you mean?
Yeah. No, well, I mean that there was a time where you needed to light in order so you would light things purposefully. Whereas now film cameras are digital cameras are so sensitive to light that you don't need artificial.
It's a difference. It's something I talk about all the time. It's a difference between quality of light versus quantity of light. And we had when the 5D first came out, and I think everybody on this panel knows my association with Nikon, as Jerry would call it. when the 5D first came out, now Marcus Bell handed me a 5D and said, take a couple photos of me and Joe Busink. This is 2006, I believe it was. And it was on 3200. And I said, Marcus, it's on 3200. He said, yeah, yeah, I know, mate. I said, but it's on 3200. I took a couple photos. I was astounded. This is when the ISO race began. And it was remarkable. But at that point in time, that's when quantity became more important than quality. It was with that camera where ISOs just went through the ceiling. And the craft of lighting and things of that sort, it was basically forgotten in most cases. So in my opinion. So that's where it was a menace in understanding how to light certain things from a directional standpoint. And these are things that everybody up here understands. But the people that go out and they buy, an inexpensive digital camera, they try to run their businesses. I have people, what I was going to talk about later, I might as well mention it now, Catherine, is that I have people coming to my boot camp that honestly don't understand, some of them, a couple of them, don't understand how to get an ambient light reading. They run professional photography businesses. That's dangerous, and that's a menace. Mm.
I would say...
Wow. Well done. You have your sound bite.
I would say one thing that technology does is it just it makes it easy for people. It makes photography more accessible to the masses, and that's one thing iPhoneography has done, for example. iPhoneography makes photography much more accessible to people day in, day out. And as a result, it's easy to get fooled and tricked into thinking that because now exposure is easy, focus is easy, that, you know, that photography is easy. And, we all know, of course, being professional photographers, that the photography truly is actually the easiest part of being in this business. I mean, it really is. The marketing and the business side of it is so much more difficult, and so many people come in unprepared. But, I mean, I don't want to sound like a dinosaur here, but when I started in this business, you actually, believe it or not, had to focus the camera manually by yourself when people were moving, and the camera didn't actually track the focus for you. So it's kind of echo a little bit about what Jerry was saying. I mean, a lot of the craft, the true craftsmanship, and you might even say some of the blue-collar aspect of photography has been taken out by technology. And so I would dare say that if you still had to manually focus your camera, that the attendance at this convention would probably be in half, because it was truly an art form that a handful of people could do.
Challenge. Oh. Go for it, Sue.
You go. Girl.
You go.
If I have a portrait studio that earns $20,000 a week shooting portraits, and I shoot with a 20D. Canon 20D, so basically a $1,200 camera with one lens. And if I shoot these portraits with one styrofoam reflector, and that's it, that is all the technology I have, and I don't know a lot about the relationship of aperture or ISO, but I know enough to shoot manually and to shoot in my studio. If I know enough to sustain an income and market myself in an industry that is so flooded with photographers, and yet I can stand out by still offering a brand that is better than others. If I can do that, then who gives a if I don't know your old craft? I'm saying is that I came from the old craft, and there is nothing about that craft that makes my life easier now. Maybe it's because, yes, I know it inside, but the truth is the survival right now is to stand out and to pay the mortgage and to get food on the table, and that has nothing to do with coming from the old craft. You can still create a modern brand and a fantastic service and experience for your clients with brand new technology.
Okay, just in rebuttal, I would say that's not what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about the old way was better. all I'm saying, it goes into the evolution thing, but the things that you just mentioned, brand and those other things, and learning the lighting in a single reflector, it's because you understand lighting and you understand the business side of it. And what I'm saying is that I think the more accessible photography comes, people think it's easy, and they don't think about the things that you just mentioned. They don't think about the business side of it. They don't think about pricing. You know, they don't think about pricing a business to be profitable, and they don't understand all the other nuts and bolts that go along with it. So that's the point that I'm making, is that the more accessible it becomes, it's an illusion that it's easy to become a professional photographer when you know that you may not have to focus the camera manually, and you don't have to necessarily set the exposure by yourself, but you've learned the craft, so you understand the mechanics and the physics behind it. And I think a lot of people get into this business and they don't understand the physics of light, and a lot of people don't even understand the relationship between ISO and f-stop and shutter speed. And that's a function of the technology. Technology's made it so easy to do those things that they don't know how to correct those situations when they get into it, ones where the technology doesn't work for them.
What it is, though, that is no. Just to answer that, is they start a business while they're learning all of that, instead of learning it and then starting a business. Because the ones that start a business while they're learning it don't survive anyway.
Exactly.
Tamara.
Oh, I didn't really have much to say. Okay, so what? I would like to split challenge. What? Yeah. So I agree about the lighting from the perspective of I can have the most amazing expression, the perfect moment, and everything's fabulous and the right gear. But if I haven't lit it well, I've missed the opportunity to showcase it to the best of my abilities. Hands down. Definitely. Although, in addition, with all this gear coming out and all the technology and the accessibility going to everybody, I truly believe, especially when it comes to portraits, where you're really trying to photograph somebody well and show something about them, and you want the viewer to feel something when you look at that portrait, that the ability to empathize with another individual and to be able to pour that into a portrait doesn't improve with a greater pixel count. Like, it doesn't matter what the gear's bringing if I don't know what I'm doing here.
If you're looking for an argument, you're not getting one.
Okay, well, then you're
say
welcome.
Something that we can argue about.
I also am a child of God.
Jeremy.
Yeah, I mean, I'm outside of y'all's industry. I don't shoot weddings. I'm not in the wedding world. But to me, all of this stuff we're discussing, lighting, knowing the cameras, knowing all this, it's almost a bit irrelevant to me. Because to me, it's still, in terms of really sticking out and getting business, it's still about your mind and the way you think and the way you see. I was just telling Jerry a story. All of you have probably seen this internet link floating around, but this one couple, or this photographer, did a shoot. Your normal engagement shoot, couple in a field with a blanket and the picnic. It's been done 1,000 times. But over the hill, you start to see these two figures standing on the hillside. And with each photo in the shoot, you see that couple get closer and closer. And as they get closer, you realize that those two weird-looking people are zombies. Oh, yeah. And the zombies get closer, and they attack the couple. And they fight the zombies, and they end up killing the zombies, and then they go back to their fun little picnic. And I don't think that photographers need to go shoot zombies, but what happened is that shoot ended up on ABC World News, CNN. It gained them worldwide exposure because they thought differently. You know, it's like they added this one thing to the mix that nobody else was doing. And that's when I sit down with photographers, I'm like, yeah, your images are amazing, but so is everybody else now. So what are you going to do with your mind to beat them? I don't care what lighting you learn or what technical stuff you learn. You're still not going to win. You're going to win with your mind and your vision and, you know, breaking outside of the mold. So,
yeah, he's ready to go. Look he's at him. He's like a paintball.
I'm a little excited. is that okay? a couple things. One, Jeremy, what you're talking about makes a lot of sense to me in a couple of ways. One is, as someone who also started about a decade ago, and although I did take a couple classes in a dark room, and technically can say I started in film, I didn't really. I mean, I was an enthusiast, excited young photographer. Well, I wasn't that young, but I was a photographer, and I was in a dark room, and I saw the paper. I saw the whole thing. It was really exciting. Dodged and burned manually. Woohoo. And then I quickly forgot how to do all those things because of the access point of how technology opened things up for me. And as someone who really enjoys gadgets and got to play like as a hobbyist, that was really cool. And that continues. Like, I love to try those things out. But what I've noticed is when I am my most creative. It has very little to do with what I can pull off technologically. In fact, it was interesting. I had the privilege of actually assisting Jeremy on a shoot a couple weeks ago. And on the shoot, there was an assistant, another assistant, the first assistant. I was number two. And the first assistant, I think, he was tech. And I think he knew more about lighting than everyone in the room combined. Like, he's just a genius. He lit the room, he lit the back, he lit everything phenomenally. And he had zero vision. I mean, I'm not going to throw the guy under the bus, but to his own, he would even say, like, I have no interest in being a photographer. I just know how to light anything. And I look at that and I go, that's, if our fight is about how do we light right and get it all perfect and ever, I think we're missing the bigger picture of what is a visual artist? What is it to me? What does it mean to envision something that others can't see, even if you have to hire a tech or lean on technology to help accomplish it? And that's the part that I think there is a kind of a homogenization, if that's a word, in our industry, where because there are a couple people who are trying to stand out, and then there's an immediate follow-up of everyone trying to emulate that one look or feel. It is the ones who are that are extraordinary, they're beyond ordinary, that I'm more struck by and that I aspire to. And even though I have a growing knowledge of technology, and I hope I want to stay relevant in that category, I also know I'll never know it all. There's always plenty more for me to know. Technology's surpassed what I can pull off on my own. Like, I know how to manually focus, but the camera probably does it better than me most of the time. So I'm going to let it. So I can attend, kind of reallocate that energy in a new direction.
Well, and look, I'm a bit of a techno geek myself, and I embrace technology. Mm-hmm. You know, I really do. And so I'm certainly not here to promote the old methods. I'm just saying that's how technology has changed it, and it certainly made it more accessible to everybody. And look at the plus side of what technology has done for us. It's taken away all that math and all those numbers, and now when I look through the viewfinder, I can really focus on composition and lighting and moments, and I don't have to think about those things anymore. Mm-hmm. And so I would never go back. I would certainly never advocate going backwards, and I truly embrace the change.
Can I follow up one thing? Actually, it's a comment to one that Cliff mentioned earlier, and I really just want clarification. I don't have a counterpoint. I'm just curious what you meant. You said that it was dangerous to not know the stuff, and I wasn't really sure what the danger was.
The danger is when a photographer doesn't understand something so simple as how to achieve an ambient light reading, okay? When they're put into a situation when there's fluctuating lighting conditions, they're not going to understand at all how to handle it. They're charging people for this. They're going to screw this up. And, you know, following that, there's been this technology. For me personally, I'm going to tell you that I'm a much better photographer now since I went digital. My skill set has increased tenfold. I think everybody can say to themselves, I am a better photographer now because of digital. I know that I am. I see light differently. I use light differently. And the benefit, and this is not a nuisance, so I'm arguing against the nuisance here, is that the learning curve for younger photographers or people that are just getting into it has shortened. Where my style, it took me 15 years to develop a style. Now people can do it in 3 or 4. But I don't know anybody that can do it in 1 or 2. Okay, they might be able to achieve accurate exposures and things like that, but a real style, it takes a few years. And so when I see photographers coming to my workshop thinking that they know it all and they don't understand how to achieve an ambient light reading, let me just finish this one point. It brings the level of expectations to the client down. Therefore, the prices come down a little bit as well. And I haven't raised my prices in a few years. My work is better than it's ever been. That's what I meant by being a menace. The level of expectation to the client has been lowered.
Yeah, and you know what? On that same point, what's very interesting is what I think is the greatest menace we have as it relates to technology has nothing to do with our gear or our lighting. It has to do with things like group purchase sites, Groupon, Living Social, etc. 2 weeks ago, I had about 4 things within 1 week come through Living Social and Groupon, where they were advertising all the rights to a portrait package, family photo session on DVD for $40. And I'm sitting there thinking, I don't know if this person has a cap on this, but if they had 200 people purchase this, they've secured the fact that they're going to go out of business. I mean, you can't stay in business with those kind of dollars. And if they're doing that many back to back to back, their craft will suffer. They can't keep up with the pace of that and produce quality work. In addition, what you were saying in respect to bringing down the level of the entire society then sees those images and has the expectation that that is portrait photography or family portrait photography or whatever the case is. And then the people who are charging regular rates where they can pay their bill then become seen as even more expensive in relation to this, the five Groupons that they got this week. So, I think that's so the biggest menace. Cliff, and you know what? I feel really close to you in this moment. But I think that's the true menace that we have to photography.
I don't think we're upset about technology. I think we're upset about the new photographer and what they are. I do. I think we're upset about the new photographer. Has anybody heard the saying MWAC here? Mother with a camera? Okay, I'm deeply offended by that. I'm a woman without children, but still, if you call a woman an MWAC and put her in a category of every mother has a camera and now she thinks she's a photographer, there's a mother's group here in the forum. They've started a forum with something like 16,000 followers that's going really well. That I find that term offensive because every one of you at some stage in your life decided to become a photographer, and who told you you weren't good enough to be one?
No one on this panel is telling those people that they shouldn't be photographers. No, we would just like to have them have a little respect for the craft before they bring it down a little bit. That's all I'm saying.
The challenge with that, though, is like, say my son, he's 12, and I love my son. If you're watching, I love you. I'm about to throw you under the bus, though. if my son comes up to me and says that my son thinks he does know everything. And relative to the 12 years he's been on the earth, I understand where he's coming from. I thought that as well. And he's not in any way wrong or bad. It would be an unreasonable expectation to set on him that he should respect the industry. Now, I'm someone who came in this industry and I was pretty cavalier, honestly. And I didn't have a context enough for what it took to really slug it out for decades. And over time, I did develop a respect and a deep appreciation, and especially when you added to that the folks who had to make a transition and go through, like, there's just on a human level, I just appreciated that new developmental stage when they got on the other end of the bell curve and decided to go again. That's incredible to me. But I don't think it's reasonable to expect a 12-year-old to act like a 16-year-old when they're only 12, just like it's not appropriate for a new photographer who has no context yet to expect that they just should automatically get it. I don't know. It just seems like an unreasonable expectation from my perspective.
Can I share a story real quick? I was telling Jerry the story a little while ago, and Cliff, I basically agree with you. I think that photographers, I always say the more you know technically, the more you can do creatively. However, I'll tell you a story that kind of shuts us all down and proves us all wrong, including myself. But there's this guy, I don't know if any of y'all have heard of him, but his name is Ryan McGinley. I don't know this guy. I've never met him. So the story goes, he goes in fields with his friends, and they all run around with their clothes off, and he shoots it all with a little tiny point-and-shoot from the 80s, like a Contax or something. He just shoots it like crazy. Like, I start seeing all these images pop up because I started hearing about it. Next thing I know, the images are so amazing and so beautifully shot, and there's so much bizarre color and bizarre framing. The next thing I know, he's shooting a huge campaign for Wrangler, and then Levi's actually, like, wants to have him too, so they hire him. Then the next thing I know, he's the youngest photographer to ever be displayed in the Smithsonian. Then he gets hired to shoot all the Oscar winners for New York Times. He shot the Olympics like nobody I've ever seen shoot sports. These images look like they should be paintings. And he's going to the Olympics with this little point and shoot. And it's the kid that probably doesn't know all that stuff that we're saying they should know.
That would get in the way.
Yeah. Right, yeah, but I'm saying, like, I agree with you, but you can. Ryan is a case of a kid that just has extraordinary vision and talent and is freaking killing it. You know, it's amazing. So
I'm going to agree with you in the sense that one of the things that I talk to people a lot about is that for some reason we call ourselves photographers, but we're artists and image makers. So as a photographer, I'm not just hired to take pictures. I'm not just hired to, you know, click the camera or light something. I'm hired for my ideas, for my vision over and over again. That's what it is. So sometimes I'm asked to direct things. And it's the same thing as this guy. Photography just happened to be the medium he was using. And it wasn't about any of the technology whatsoever. And the technology, though, it could be whatever technology he happened to be using, could have been essential to his vision. I don't know. I think it's kind of a moot point that, you know, it's we're artists. We call ourselves photographers. And so, yes, the entire idea of, okay, how has technology changed to become a menace? It's basically how has it affected us as artists? So that's kind of how I view it.
I just want to add something as well. You know, I find that what's missing with technology, it's an oxymoron. You know, the internet and all the devices that we have make the world a very, very small place. At the same time, it makes us, how do I say this? Give an example. I'm driving from New York to Philadelphia, about to shoot a wedding, and I'm there on the computer wirelessly doing a client interview via Skype, and she's watching me as we're I wasn't driving, so let's just, please drive safely. safety first. But no. So I was in the front seat, Melissa was driving, and there I am doing an inquiry, and she's seeing me and watching the world go by as I do an inquiry and sell my personality along with my work. I would stop the video, share my screen. She would talk about shooting in a field. I would go to images in a field. And literally within an hour while I was driving, I booked this wedding. And technology, I wouldn't have done that. I made $15,000 driving to Philadelphia while I was just having some fun and taking my time. Ridiculous. At the same time, though, I think what's missing is we're all taught to do those social networking and tweeting and Facebooking and all these things. But when was the last time you received a phone call from a friend? When was the last time you actually called a wedding vendor and actually went out of your way to have dinner with them and lunch with them rather than sending them an email? So I find it's also the way we grew up. Think about it. You know, I grew up and played, you know, cops and robbers, and, you know, we ran around in the backyard. Now, kids these days, they're playing with Xbox, they're playing with PlayStation, they're playing with everything. And I'm just saying is that I think we all very much agree that it's a blessing and a curse, you know, where there's things that we love about it, there's things that we hate about it. Personally, I almost think, you know what, not another thing. No, Twitter came out, not another thing. Facebook, Instagram, Google+, you know, like there's always something else. And photography was about taking pictures, damn it. I mean, I got my, can you remember? Like RB67, I got out there, my tripod, my Metz flash, I bounced it. It was about relationships. It was about communication. And yes, there are exceptions to every rule. And I think, Sue, what you were saying before, you have a great personality. You're very endearing. You're very talented. There's no doubt no matter what you do, you'll sell it. And, you know, there's going to be people out there that will get work, and you can use any medium. I think it comes back to the personality. It comes back to the talent. But I think everyone on this panel has cursed technology at the same time as saying, thank God the iPhone exists. You know, I can communicate with my family. I mean, exactly. I mean, I'm still getting over the fax machine, for God's sake. I still can't work that thing out and how that works. Thank you. Yes. But you think of all the things that this device can do. I just feel that, you know, maybe your point of difference is your humanity, and this has taken humanity away a little bit. I love it to death. Everything with an eye in front of it, I've bought it and I love it. At the same time, though, I think there's some people out there that will go out there and meet the vendors and do those things, know the craft. I guess what I'm sure we'll all agree that we will use the best of the old world and use the best of the new world and combine it together. And that's what it's all about.
Yeah, so you brought up social media, and I think one of the things we've talked about is photographers, especially new ones, being lazy. And I've noticed in the educational system, social media has allowed a lot of educators that don't know how to shoot teach. What's your guys' perspective on that? When it comes to education, what's more important, being a better marketer or being a better photographer?
I'm for it.
And also being a teacher. Because there's a lot of phenomenal photographers who aren't very good teachers either, and that's a skill set that needs to be considered in the process for sure.
So, Greg.
Obviously, I think Dane hit it on the head. You got to be a good teacher first, but you also have to know the craft. And, you know, if you're just a good marketer and a so-so photographer, then what are you giving your clients? I mean, that's the bottom line is what's the product that we're delivering to our clients. Kind of going back to where we were, not to backtrack, but, you know, a little bit of that danger that I think that Cliff was talking about is really, I mean, let's face it, there's no barrier to entry in this business. You know, get a camera, buy yourself a camera, throw up a website, and pretty soon you can start taking money from people. And
people might give you money.
Because it's a big. I'm sorry. Let me rephrase that. People will buy your services.
Yeah.
And, you know.
I'm not going to steal it from them. It's a free market, and they're choosing it.
Some people are stealing.
And so, you know, with the technology thing, if you come into this, and there are times when the technology is going to help you and it's going to do good things for you, but also you have to understand the theory behind the technology so that when you get into those situations, that the technology is not going to function for you, like you're shooting in backlight or you're shooting in a window or you're shooting in harsh lighting conditions, then that's what separates the good photographers from the so-so photographers and the ones that are going to be successful in the long run. But in the end, we always want to leave clients with a good impression, and we don't want our clients out there thinking that photographers are scam artists. And so I think that if you don't come into this business with a reasonable amount of skills and technical knowledge, then you're hurting all of us.
Yeah, I mean, but going with education though, I mean, really thinking about this, I mean, I've watched transitions.
I'll chime in. I'm very fortunate in that about five times a year, I have 20 students from all over the world pay $1,800 to come and see me in my studio in Philadelphia area. The fact that there are people out there that are teaching that shouldn't be, I'm going to argue that technology helps the good teachers and really punishes the poor teachers. So those that are poor, that are tweeting and Facebooking, because the going to hit the fan when that person gives a crappy workshop. Mm-hmm. And Jeff Bezos said one time, the founder of Amazon, he said, in the analog world, if you screw up, six people are going to find out. Today, it's going to be 6 or 60,000. So if someone gives a crappy workshop, the technology that helped them have people come to their first and second or third, they ain't going to have a fourth unless they can produce. So this technology has helped me tremendously. All I do is post it, a new date on my blog, and I tweet it, and people come. I haven't spammed anybody. I haven't advertised in a magazine. So this is where the technology has really benefited me.
Okay, because you're renowned for being an exceptional teacher. You have a word of mouth around you that is you are one of the best teachers.
I appreciate that very much.
I'm going to throw something out there that's very opinionated. What really gets me going at the moment is the amount of people that are educating that can't sustain an income. So you might be a good shooter, and then you're putting your pretty pictures on your website, and I know of maybe five educators who have a perception of being a good photographer that cannot make money as photographers, educating other people to shoot well. And it seems to me that in the education market, everyone's lining up to learn to shoot better, and nobody can actually sustain an income. Now, I've sustained an income from portraiture for over half my life.
Sing it.
Yeah. So that's what frightens me, is the shooters that can't make money that are now earning an income from education.
It's like those people that are saying, come to my workshop, we'll teach you how to book high-end weddings when they're not shooting high-end weddings.
I just want to piggyback on that real quick. While I totally agree with you, as long as people are upfront about it, that's the difference. Because, for example, like I have a friend who's a fine art photographer. You go to her to learn her fine art techniques, what she does, how she comes up with her ideas. She never says, okay, come to my workshop, you will book, you know, expensive weddings, blah, blah, blah. She's saying, come to me and I will help you be inspired and produce better work. And there's also other photographers that I know, you guys know, the work's kind of crappy, but they're really good at marketing. They say, come to me and I will tell you how to market your work. So if you're just upfront about it.
We want names.
I know, right? Yeah. We'll talk later.
Nobody's watching.
I want to jump in on this because Sue's helped making my point. And going back to which is better, to be a better marketer or be a good photographer? Well, you feel ripped off because people are teaching photographers who can't sustain a business. And don't you think at the same time, because how do they attract that audience? Okay, they're a good marketer, so they're a good writer, they're a savvy blogger, they can whip up a frenzy in social media and gain a following. Just like a photographer that doesn't have a lot of skill, but can also, you know, do the same thing with their wedding clients. And so, yeah, they're probably not going to stay in business very long, but at the same time, they're going to gain a following because they're a good writer. They've got, you know, they can write on, make good blog posts, and they get an audience on their blog. But in the end, maybe their clients aren't really happy with the work. So they're not going to sustain a business for very long. But it goes along in that whole line that Cliff was talking about and sort of pulling the bar lower because they're really just fooling people.
Well, quick question. I'll let Jerry go. Do you feel that educators are picked based on merit or on popularity?
Wow, that's
you're sitting there thinking, but I'm both.
No. You know, I guess I'm gonna make the point that I was gonna make before, and I'll probably indirectly answer that. Recently, there was a workshop that was advertised in a certain country with all these speakers that I'd never heard of, and I'm like, I can't remember the last time I actually surfed the internet looking at other photographers' work, and so I thought, you know what, I was in bed one day, and I'm like, you know what, let me just surf. So I go to each of these photographers' site. Oh, who's this? And I look at their site, and I'm like, oh, I'm going. Oh, no. Oh, no, come on, no. Bad exposure, underexposed, high-pass filter, HDR, like really bad, like images and the way it's post-processed. And I'm like, okay, maybe they're teaching something else, but they were teaching photography. It wasn't like I'm teaching business. They were teaching photography. Went to the next website. And the common thread was this is really bad. Now, this is where it affects us, okay? What happens is that this generation, this new generation who knows how to market virally and all these sort of things and the social networking can get a following, get to a point where they advertise, hey, come to my workshop, come to this big convention. Then they teach this new, very green, this golden answer. This is, I will provide you the golden answer on how to become a successful photographer and creative and so on. This new generation learn from these people and it's okay that they shoot a whole wedding at 1.2. A family shot with 10 people at 1.2, really? Or saying it's okay that shots are out of focus, add some black and white, add a bit of noise, add a vignette, and you're creative.
That's their style.
Well, what I'm saying is, you know, I'm all for difference, don't get me wrong, but this is what happens. This is how it affects the industry eventually. Well, it is now. So if all this new generation actually learn the wrong way, they go out there and successfully market to new brides, because we know that you don't have to be a great photographer to market yourself, then the weddings, portraits, whatever, can go out looking pretty bad. That gives photography a bad name. Why go to a professional when you can get Uncle Harry with an iPhone to take a decent picture? And then all of a sudden, we can't compete. When I say we, collectively as an industry, and then the price goes down. And now where once we were Neiman Marcus and Barney's, now we're like Dillard's and J.C. Penney. So it may be okay for us. I mean, my mind and my heart tell me something different. As a teacher, I feel very sad. You know, I applaud people going to you who don't know exposure or lighting because then they'll learn it. And I applaud people coming to me to learn because they'll learn. So I don't begrudge newbies. I was once a newbie and didn't know anything. But I begrudge the people that put themselves in a position to teach something they don't really know themselves. It's because that the internet, it's sort of like it puffs you up with pride. You get 20,000 followers. It's like you are not how many Twitter followers you have. It's like, well, does it really matter, you know, how many followers you have? But all of a sudden, you can get people playing double what they're paying with us.
And
that's what I'm saying is that's all fun. It gives you a warm and fuzzy on popular, but at the end of the day, what does that mean for the actual end client? And like I said, eventually it gets to a point where the industry gets a bad name, and there's few people that are exceptions to the rule, I guess is what I'm saying. And very soon, you know, they'll know who the good teachers are and who are not. But I feel that, yes, the question probably that you asked before about the popularity, yes, you know, it's like with anything. You know, why? I mean, I'm looking at the presidential campaign here. Is it a fluke that Mitt Romney is a handsome dude? I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, I don't.
Handsome?
I find him pretty handsome. If I had to do an older guy, he would be the one.
I challenge.
Plus, I'm so offended.
Very quickly, just on that note, one of the things that struck me a couple months ago. I'm thinking, you know, people ask me, why is the industry devalued? Why is it devalued? And I thought to myself for a second, you know, with this,
The magic is gone.
Yeah, it's not a mystery.
We used to be, and I'm not lament. I don't want anyone.
What magic is gone?
I don't want anyone to think that I am lamenting the film days, because I made more money last year than I've ever made in my career.
How much? Can you let us know?
Nah, you know.
Numbers. We want names and numbers.
But regardless, so again, I am not a digital curmudgeon. I love the digital technology.
That's your Twitter lead.
Please. What does that word mean now?
Curmudgeon. Yeah. Grumpy guy.
It's like, damn those digital kids, get off my lawn!
Yeah. You know?
I mean, come on. I love the technology.
That was...
Okay?
You, that's what I'm talking about. You're up here for me. Now you're
that's
like
it. That.
Okay?
That's it.
So...
Wow.
But when we shot film, I was a wedding photographer and I shot film up until about 2005 or 6. And I went digital. And the client had to wait about 6 weeks for these proofs. And when they got this stuff back, they would be like, oh, my God, how did they do this? They were craftsmen, photographers. I'm saying they, because photographers, they were craftsmen. And they were looked upon as almost magicians. They pulled this photo out of their ass. How did they do this? Now, people are showing them, like, albums on their iPhone on the wedding night. So how can we expect to keep the value of the industry up, except unless we give them a product that is superior beyond belief? That's my goal at every wedding.
But again, you can still do that if what you're considering magic is expression and interaction and what you're pulling out. Like, I don't care if it's 3 days later or 6 weeks later. If they're saying, how did you get them to give you that?
Some people don't know the difference. Some people just don't know the difference. A photo is a photo is a photo. Some of them. Fortunately, hopefully we all have clients up here that know the difference. But there are many out there that don't.
Yeah, but again, there's – and I just spoke on this last night here about the fact that there's a difference between shooting for marketing, shooting for sales, shooting for your portfolio in terms of who you're looking to connect with and who you want to impress. If what you're doing is I want to build a solid portfolio that just rocks and people come to it and the photographers say, I love it, I'm going to follow you on Twitter, that's this. If I'm shooting for marketing as in I want to catch a potential client's eye – then I'm going to shoot this way. And if I want to shoot for sales, I'm going to do what they want, that when they look at the images, they feel something, they care about it, and they commit to it.
I shoot for myself for pride and hope.
You shoot everything for yourself?
At a wedding, my intent at a wedding.
I have an argument with you. Go.
My intent at a wedding is to cover my ass first.
Yes.
Okay.
Like literally? Like,
yeah.
Yes. That's what I was thinking. Okay.
And make sure that the client, I take care of all the client's needs.
Okay. You shoot for them first.
I have a perfect understanding that I need to please them.
Right, you shoot for them first.
I shoot for them first.
Yes.
And then I do my best to get images that move me.
That's what I agree with that too.
Will move the client.
Absolutely. But I shoot for them first.
The client standards might be over here, but I'm trying to surpass those standards.
Right. And you're also trying to show them what standards can be. When you're saying you want to surpass it? You want to show them, like, you're good enough with five people standing together, looking at the camera, showing their faces, catch lights, smiling. That you're fine with that.
I'm looking for the hidden moment, of course.
Yeah, but I want to show you that we can go beyond this, and that's why you want me every time.
Because that guy's package doesn't come with me.
Right. But that is what I'm saying, is there's a difference between what you're shooting for.
That's right.
Right. Well, and I think what Clint's trying to say, too, is we're our own harshest critic.
Yes, absolutely.
So if I can please myself, then I know that the client's going to be happy.
Yeah.
There was a line there, but I'll leave it.
I know. I want to know what the answer is to our education market. I want to know how we limit the educators that aren't educating well. Are they just going to kill themselves through bad education?
Well, it's the Groupon. It's the Groupon. They will cycle through.
They
will have to.
They come to my workshop or Cliff's.
Are we all chopped liver?
Okay, all right. Cliff, I was betting in for us, buddy.
Yeah. I honestly think it's just gonna. I really feel like this is just the beginning. I mean, it's gonna get worse and worse and worse. You know, in the number of teachers, the number of photographers, like, this is still the beginning. We feel like we've been seeing this for years now, and this is probably just the tiny little window at the beginning. I mean, I see all the time photographers shoot for 3 months. The next thing they're teaching workshops. Mm. I have a former assistant that went straight from assisting me to teaching workshops. Like, it's crazy. And so, you know, my stint is, I pretty much agree with all of you, it's terrible. And it's terrible that people are teaching and they don't know what they're doing. but I also don't care because it's not going to help me to complain because it's just going to keep going. Everybody loves photography. Everybody. I have so many doctors and teachers and random people who are jealous of what we do because photography is so awesome. And someone goes on Facebook and they upload a photo and their mom likes it and their friends think they're awesome. You should be a photographer. And the next thing you know, there's a website, so-and-so's name, photography. And that's how it's being born. And it's just going to keep happening. And so we have to go back to the, I always go back to the vision thing. So what am I going to do to outthink all these people? You know, Bill Gates said the future is intellectual property, referring to our minds. What are we going to do to top people with our minds? Because it's just going to keep getting worse. So,
well, we see this. Sorry.
No, yeah.
We see this.
You're leading.
Narrowing.
Thank you.
We see this narrowing gap between professional and amateur, you know. And then it's, we're talking about teaching, but then we also see it in technology. And so iPhone having, how, what is the 4S? How many megapixels? 8 or something?
77.
No, that's the D800 with 36.
No, but here's my concern. I want to throw this out to you guys. Let's be honest. Sorry, Canon and Nikon, they don't care about us.
Did you hear that?
I didn't hear that.
That was
the consumer market is their market. Let's be honest.
We're 1% of the market in our country.
I'm gonna call bull.
This is good.
Tony, did you get that?
The moderator, I like it.
Edit that one too.
No, but I would like to know if so for next, you know, these phones are going more and more. It's fearful. Are the camera manufacturers going to put us out of business?
Okay. Would you mind if I just jump in real quick? Because if we look at other industries that have been affected by digital, so anything that has been digitized, so you look at music, you look at books. It'd be tempting, I think, to look at publishers, for example, as books, as a metaphor, and say, yeah, publishers used to, Seth Godin says this all the time, publishers sold books not to readers, they sold them to bookstores. And that's why the publishing industry is in such trouble, because we don't need middlemen anymore. We don't need the bookstores. We can go straight to an Amazon and get it. Well, now all of a sudden, if I'm Nikon or Canon or any manufacturer, it might feel like, gosh, or even we're professionals, like we're in between. Who's in between? If I'm in the in-between spot, you're in trouble, is what my take is. So from a perspective of, you know, are the businesses for us or against us? They never have been for us. If they're a business, they've been for making money, and they're smartly looking at where is the market going and applying the resources in the direction to maximize profits. In my mind, that's what they exist for. And now if indeed the industry is going far more consumer, like that's where the market is, that's fine. But what I'm struck by in this conversation is it seems like we're looking through the lens of it's such a negative. The industry as we knew it is dead. It's dying. And okay, we can grieve it and look back on it and say, isn't it cool we were there then, if some of us were there at different times. But on some level, it's amoral. Like, it's not good or bad. It just is. And now we have a new emergence. Out of every death, there's a potential life. And how are we going to get into that in a way that is resourceful? And what's ironic is if indeed things are getting the same with consumers, isn't there actually more opportunity to stand out when you leverage that creativity in a unique and powerful way? It seems to me that there is.
That's the only way I survived.
So I don't know that everyone's saying it so negative, though. I mean, I think that's a great point, though. The publishing industry, that is actually an absolute perfect parallel, because we're kind of all going in that direction of what do I do now? But I checked into this hotel and FaceTimed my kids as I walked around the hotel room. And then my daughter played something for me that she recorded on GarageBand. And then my husband showed me a picture he just shot of either on his iPhone, put it up next to the FaceTime thing. And like, I just felt so connected and with my family, all because of technology. I mean, I think there's just, I mean, obviously we all know that, but there's.
I just tweeted the picture of Jeremy just now, so. I found it kind of funny to do that.
That was so 27 seconds ago.
Can I just say something as well about technology? I went to a friend's house for dinner and I saw a crate with records. Now, a record is a piece of vinyl that you put on this instrument, the needle goes on, and you hear sound and a crackle every once in a while. But anyway, so I saw these records and I grew up with a record player and I was in heaven. It was just amazing experience. I literally was shuffling through, you know, the good old crate, and you're doing this. Mm. You know the action, don't we? We bring it out, and I'm like, and I'm enjoying the actual artwork. I enjoyed it. It was beautiful, and it was big. I opened up. I even actually started reading the lyrics. I knew who the producer was. Like, it was a there was a sensibility about it that I hadn't quite experienced for many, many years. I took out the record, and you know how you hold it like that? Your thumb there in the middle, you don't want to touch it, and I'm looking at it, and I turn it around, and then I place it on the record player. I grab that needle, and I hear the crackle. And I'm like, man, I missed that. And you know what I did? I rode on my push bike in LA. I went to Amoeba Records, and I bought a record player, and I bought about 50 records that I grew up with. And now when I listen to music in LA, I put the record player on. Every five songs, I choose a different record. And I'm telling you that that feeling that, that I've got back, that nostalgia, I think it was so beautiful. Now, whether it was it reminded me of my childhood or whatever, but the act of physically doing it, it's like playing ping pong on Xbox or actually physically playing ping pong. You can't beat it. And I don't think anyone's arguing about technology. I think we all love the positives about it, but and we all know where it's going. And I think that it's easy for us to say because we're all very successful as photographers. We're all very successful in business. But it's like saying, I mean, I feel like sometimes we're on this panel and, you know, it's like a rich person that says, oh, money isn't everything. Well, it's easy for us to say because we're already very successful. We've been there. We've done that. We've done the hard yards. But what about the people out there who are listening to this show and perhaps might forego the street smart that we were brought up with? I think that's what's missing, I think, for me, is the street smart. Now we're learning the computer smart. We're learning maybe the book smart, but it's that...
Those are the streets now. That's,
the iPad books.
Those are the streets.
Yeah. No. Look, I know, but what... I understand that, but I'm just saying is that I'm really happy that I'm the age that I'm at, and I'm happy that I've experienced what I've experienced. And yes, you have to evolve. You evolve or die. We've all heard that before.
And Steve Jobs, if you guys read the... We were just talking about this earlier, the book. He, for all intents and purposes, digitized the entire music movement in many respects, and he would go home and listen to records on vinyl.
Is that funny?
Which I think is very interesting.
Yeah.
I don't know if this is the right time to say it, but I mean, for me, the answer to the question, is technology a menace to photography? For me, I feel like there's an elephant in the room that no one discusses, and it's something that I struggle with, and it's even hard to talk about because it's true. But I think the biggest menace is the addiction to technology. I know all photographers, they sit around all day, and it's so cool to see a tweet by Dane, followed by a tweet by you, followed by a tweet by you. And I want to click every one of those. And I'm so...
Thank you for clicking mine.
So at home, when I'm at home with my kids, or when I'm supposed to be shooting, like 10 years ago when maybe we were shooting a personal project, now we're sitting there at our computers just clicking each other's links. Ooh, what's he talking about now? And it's become such a reaction that all the time I'm like staring at my phone when I could be out shooting or doing something. Even from a family perspective, my wife is always like, put your freaking phone down. You know, and I think we're all getting addicted to it. And so photographers, instead of going out and pursuing this personal project, instead of doing this thing, they're just obsessed with the blogging. And sometimes I want to scream on Twitter, why aren't we talking about images? Where every one of you in your bios have the word photographer, but no one is talking about good images.
Ironically, you're tweeting it.
Yeah, exactly. But you know what I'm saying? It's like nobody talks about photos. It's like I so wish I could go on Twitter and see a feed. Did you see this photo that Jerry shot? Did you see this photo? Nobody's discussing that stuff. You know, it's all because we're just clicking each other.
There are not many good photographers out there. You know what I'm saying?
There
is. Wait a second. Yeah. There are great photographers, but that's just it. There's some people that don't really, I guess, respect the craft or really understand it. So the first thing they do is they'll promote something else. There's always, I find, I don't know, social networking for me, and maybe I'm cynical about this subject, but for me, it's just that a lot of it lately is just about getting notoriety. I want you to know me. Well, big deal if you know me or not. Are we going to inspire each other? I see what the things that you're doing, and it inspires me to try something different. You know what I mean? I see the things that Sue does. You know what I mean? Just it's a reinvention. And like I said, I think for all of us on this table, I've known a lot of you guys for a long time, and we always seem to evolve. We adopt the technology. We adopt the new creativity. I think, like I said, for us, it's the new generation that we're concerned with that perhaps are a one-track mind. They're only focused on one thing. But I think you have to be good at everything. be a good social networker, be a good photographer, be a good marketer and a business person, and don't forget to be a good husband. Don't be forget to be a good wife, boyfriend, girlfriend, family person, lover, yes, all those things. You know what I mean?
Lover.
So I guess the official answer, technology is a menace to marriage and to your personal projects and to your career.
Well, I have a question about that, Jeremy, because I that fight sounds very familiar in my family. And if my wife is watching, okay, can you hang out with my son for a minute? How do we ask this? Is technology immoral, though? Like, it doesn't. It seems like anything could be an addiction. There's people who got lost, I'm guessing, in the dark room and maybe never came out. They're, you know, the fumes. No, Jerry, it wasn't. Sometimes a cigar is just a cigar. That's all it is.
That was a metaphor.
Dang red, I hate that. Yes. But it seems like I like what you're saying, and at the same time, sometimes in this conversation about making the technology or whatever it is, a good, bad, right, wrong, broken, unbroken thing. What I'm hearing what you're saying is there's a character awareness thing. Like, am I relating with this thing, this tool, this whatever, in a way that is in alignment with what I want to do, what I want to ultimately accomplish? How can I stay awake at the wheel? And it seems like the folks who are artistic, they tend to do a couple things simultaneously. One is they do break rules. Like that old famous Apple ad of, you know, think different, of all the people who continually broke rules are the ones that we hold up. And at the same time, there's I want to find a way to both leverage the technology, do everything we possibly can with it, not worship it, and yet not be in this place of sounding like, gosh, rock and roll, and these kids, they're coming up, and it's going to be bad. Like, even just an old generation. I mean, we're a bilingual generation. Like, we adopted and are speaking a new language. Digital is our second language for many of us on this panel. And for the kids that are coming up right now, that's not so. They grew up digital, and that is their new nostalgia. They'll wake up and go, remember the iPod? That was so, you know, I used to click, 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 click on the white thing. It was really...
Aren't we saying that now?
Yeah, well, for sure. But they're not even... Honestly, I don't think they're even saying any of those things. I think it's that kid with the contact. Like the unorthodox creative, those are the ones that I'm just blown away with because they actually can't be bothered with what the masses are doing. So maybe that's the trick, is if you really want to be creative, just go in the exact opposite direction where everyone else is going. And abracadabra, look, you look like a creative.
His name is Jose Villa. The man does beautiful images. He still shoots film, and, you know, he's doing very well. So there's exceptions to every rule.
I'd like to challenge one thing about film. I recently did a private consultation with someone in business who shoots film only, and it makes her sitting fee 5 times higher than it could be. Therefore, she does not get many bookings. So we talked about that, and I was really stuck with how I can market her, because I could give her 40 ways to market her business, and none of them involved such an expensive sitting fee. And I tried to explain to her that the move to digital could potentially save her $1,500 per shoot. And she said, if I have to become a digital photographer, I'm going to quit, because I hate it. And I actually feel that she's left behind. And I think if you're still shooting film, you need to break up with film and get a new partner and move on, because we have moved on. I get it. I shot on a Hasselblad for 12 years, medium format. Somebody gave me an 8-megapixel Kodak camera that only shot JPEG, flared purple, flared highlights, and said, you have to shoot on this from now on. I had the best camera in the world. It was hideous what I had to go through. But I'm there now. We need to keep moving. Get rid of the film camera.
Lindsay, you had something.
I guess that what I was going to say is, from the perspective, okay, don't hate on me, but being the generation, I definitely am the generation you're talking about as far as coming up with all these new things. For me, all that matters is you end up being successful and making a living in what you love. And so all these things that you're pointing out, I kind of shrug. Okay, so maybe I didn't know what I was doing in the beginning, but the fact that I had a digital camera and I could learn every time I was shooting and getting better, and I could charge more as I was getting better. Now, I understand all the arguments. Okay, you know, people are charging too little because it's too easy and all those things. But okay, what about if I was getting everybody talking on social networking? But it helped me get more business, which then allowed me to charge more. And then I kept learning and getting better. It has nothing to do with the technology or that. It's about the person. Like, in the end, if you're a good photographer, if you have good ideas, I mean, that's what wins.
Yeah, and I don't know why. I think because I'm hearing the word generational and I, the idea of newbies. I mean, I'm sure all of you have this. I have people coming up to me all the time, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s. I'm getting into this. I'm really interested. I'm looking around. I don't think it's generational. I mean, that's a whole different question maybe as it relates to technology in terms of what you've been familiar with and what makes sense to you. We talked earlier about how my 10-year-old picked up a phone that had a cord on it. And she's like, oh, look at this new thing. It was, you know, it was just such a surreal concept. And so it's not that. It's the idea if you're entering the profession right now and you do want to shoot professionally, not just is technology a menace to photography for professionals or hobbyists or enthusiasts or all?
That's why we're here.
I guess maybe I'm just like a very upbeat person about it, but everything for technology for me has only made me a better photographer. It's allowed me to be more free in what I try. It's allowed me to reach more people. Like, okay, for example, one of the things I talk about is, okay, I'm in New York City and I want to be a fashion photographer. How impossible is that? I mean, it's pretty impossible. But what I can do is I can figure out, okay, there's this editor at whatever magazine. How the heck in real life would I ever get a hold of this person? But now I know their name. I know they have a Twitter account. I follow them on Twitter. I periodically will comment, start a conversation. So then maybe when I email them, they see my name and think, oh, Lindsay Adler, I've seen that name. They open it.
That girl keeps Twittering me.
Yeah, that girl keeps Twittering me. What, like, what is, like, who is she? No, seriously, though, you know what I mean? They recognize you. Or, I mean, there's a million examples like that. So I guess for me, it's all the person and it's all how you approach it. Everything can be bad. Everything can be good. And it's just everything for me. Technology has been essential. I can't think of anything that I've accomplished except for my ideas that technology wasn't essential to. And that's what I think it comes down to, your ideas. That's what makes, you know, whoever stands out stand out. So
do you guys know Art Streiber?
That's right. We were just talking about that. So
I have something to say.
Yeah. Well, then a new social media explodes. There's no advertising for it because it's not word of mouth anymore. It's word of mouth. And it explodes because this year Facebook will hit 1 billion users. And the average Facebook user has 684 friends. This is social media at its finest. We're about to see this year. Pinterest comes on board as a new social media marketed, it says he, she, but mostly it's to women. And yes, it is a very female-dominated social media. It explodes in 9 months. I just booked a shoot in Melbourne from Sydney, a shoot in LA and a shoot in Seattle just because they saw a pin and followed it back to my website. So now we're talking about, and I'm not even on Pinterest yet, and I'm booking shoots.
And Pinterest, why I think everyone's like, God, what's going on? How did it take off so fast? Pinterest, I think, works. And Jeremy, I'm interested in hearing your perspective. But I think Pinterest works because we're doing something we've always done our whole lives. We've always torn out recipes or like highlighted this or grabbed this or, you know, attached this. And Pinterest is just like a way to do it easier and better and to now have like all these. I mean, I have a cookbook on there. And I have a interior decorating book on there, and I have a photography inspiration. I mean, whatever the case is, it's something that there's zero learning curve. We intuitively have always done this. I think that's what's so fascinating about it.
I'm one of the two guys in the world that uses Pinterest, and I love it. I know, right? No, I'm.
Oh, you'll love it.
Is it actually? Are you allowed to steal other people's images from other people's websites?
Yeah, I'm about to get into that. So there's several things. Number one, I think it's amazing because I tell photographers to build inspiration boards, find out what inspires you, find out what makes you want to be who you are. So it's really easy to do that. And I did when I first joined. I did a search for my name, Cowart, and of course all these images came up. People pinning my work, which I thought was great. I'm personally not offended by it. I think even if they don't. I don't care. You know, my name was on most of it, but even stuff, I was like, oh, well, you know, it is what it is. But what's interesting, and Pinterest will have to find out, is that they, in the Pinterest etiquette, it says it's not a good thing to pin your own work. They don't encourage self-promotion. They say don't pin your own work. But then in the fine print and the copyright stuff, you can only upload images that you own the rights to. So they got to figure that out. It's like, I mean, they literally, it's a clear, straight down the line contradiction. You don't upload your own work. That's not cool. Bad etiquette. But, oh, by the way, you can't upload it unless you own the rights to it.
To try not to only self-promote.
True. Yeah. But still, I mean, anytime I see other photographers pinning their own work, it's like frowned upon. But it is. I agree. I could see all kinds of wedding photographers booking more work that way than anything else, because it's like once you pin something, if the image is amazing, which I like because it goes back to my passion about true vision and true creativity, it spreads like wildfire on Pinterest. And so I do think that will be the next wave of, especially you guys, wedding photographers getting jobs. I mean, I work in the entertainment industry. No creative director at Sony or, head at ABC creative director, they're not using Pinterest to find photographers. It's a very small pocket. But I could see how for everyday wedding photographer, family photographers, it's going to be the next wave for sure.
If you were interested, let's say, if you went to my website and
loved what you saw, could you just do a screen grab and then
Absolutely.
Pin it. You literally have a button.
And
download it.
And there's no name attached to it.
There doesn't have to be. No.
Oh, this
is. It links back to your site.
It links back
to it. They can still do a screen grab, save it to their desktop, upload it as their own.
But
easy.
That's not frowned upon, right?
So. We're legalizing this stuff, right? We're saying it's okay to copy work and not put a name to it.
No, I'm not saying it's okay. I'm just saying that it's happening and it's going to keep happening.
It's happening anyway.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's actually one last throw out. Is one of the comments I get a lot is,
I want it to be controversial.
How do you watermark? how do you watermark your images? How do you, people are so concerned about protecting their images, and I understand. I'm a professional. I went through the same thing, but I want to know your guys' thoughts on. There's no way to truly protect your images. No. There is no way. So for the people that are scared out there, that are holding themselves back because they don't want to put their images out there.
We're just going back to the idea of spending a ton of energy about something that's out of your control anyway. Like, to me, the idea of trying to protect everything I do, it's like, where can I mean, I could use that energy to much better effect. It's going to happen anyway. Pinterest, I mean, people are already doing screen grabs. They're already taking photos with their iPhone and making it their profile pic. You know, that's already happening.
Especially for us, we're, portrait and fashion and wedding. People hire us to shoot their images. They're hiring us to produce for them. They're hiring us to produce an idea. This is different for someone perhaps who's a stock photographer or something like that. But people that might take one of my images and use it someplace, I'm putting my images up at like 800 pixels alongside, and I put my copyright symbol on it so that, okay, you know what? If somebody wants to put it on Pinterest, cool. Gets my name out there. I'm okay with that, people sharing the ideas. Somebody uses it, puts it on a site for commercial use. All right, that's not ideal, but it's an 800 pixel on the alongside picture with my name on it. Okay, but in the end, if somebody is going to hire me, maybe somebody sees that picture on Pinterest. When they hire me to do the work that I do, that one person who maybe ripped me off and happened to put it on Pinterest, I'm going to make a heck of a lot more money by the fact that they showed a whole bunch of people.
But what if your name's not on it?
Your name's not on it and there's no link.
I just found this out recently. One of the guys at Kelby taught me this. I don't know if it's possible, but y'all might know this. But there's a way to embed your watermark invisibly. And if it got copied, and if you found out someone else is claiming your work as theirs, you can literally go into Photoshop, reveal watermark, boom, it shows up, and you have physical proof. You could even tell them, you know what, go into Photoshop, filter, reveal watermark, and your name appears. I think that's pretty fascinating.
But
a lot of people.
Where, at what point would you use that?
Well, I think it's just a safe idea for all your images that are going online.
But at what point? But I'm saying, so you do that, and then what?
I'm just saying for further security, further protection, in case
you're saying if somebody tries to sell it.
If somebody's, like, I've had several times people, like, I had a guy on Flickr upload my entire portfolio and write stories about each photo and how he got them.
Well, yeah. Okay, so you know what's cool about that story, Jeremy? Is I first of all, I'm sorry. one of the first times I ever met you actually was, I think it was Mike Hanline at White House actually said some comment about, like, I'm really sorry that happened, Jeremy. I'm like, that's really interesting. Who's this Jeremy guy? Check him out. Follow the thread. And somebody had ripped you off, told a story about it. It might have been one of the many times this has happened. And I went, oh, that's Jeremy's work. Oh, this guy's pretty awesome. And on top of that, there were all these other people in your following who basically buried that guy. Like, no one had to litigate. Nobody had to do anything. It was just like this like group mob, social speaking. And you know, this person will never emerge. Don't do that. Quick comment on that. The tension in all of this stuff and this idea of protecting is, it seems like digital gives us a chance to be ubiquitous. We can be everywhere now, and that's the massive benefit of digital. But the trade-off, and there's just a trade-off, it's a nature of it, is that if we're going to be everywhere all the time, and it can be, if there are zeros and ones, it can be copied. Like, even if there is a way to get that cool watermark thing, someone will find a way to strip it, you know, and rip all that off. And even though it could be a best practice, that's great. But ultimately, if we're not going to ultimately litigate, isn't it cool that we live in an era where that actually will get found out more often than not, and more than likely, people will be able to pounce on that. And probably you'll be the benefactor. At least I became your follower that day.
You know what? It's a blessing and a curse again. So I had my images copied a few weeks ago by three people, and they were buried straight away. Hey, so-and-so's copying your work. We sent a dirty email, Facebook account, Twitter account. Everything was, it vanished. But people sometimes who don't deserve to be buried, and I know you've experienced this, and all of us at some point have experienced this because people are jealous and they're bored, you can be buried and you don't deserve it. So your name can go virally in a bad way as well. So you know what? Like, it's just this, you're walking on eggshells to a certain extent. So you can be a great guy, great work, all good intentions. And Jeremy, you do wonderful things with Help Portrait, and people try to shake you down saying you're doing it for the wrong reasons. I mean, come on. I mean, look, what an amazing initiative. And how dare you even suggest such a thing? But it's one of those things, you know. It's, social networking is a wonderful thing in many ways. At the same time, it's like, what a shame, you know.
Well, except the only counter I'd give to that is I'm very familiar with the season in which you're speaking, where I had kind of a rough go online. And it was really painful on a personal level. And then I realized, it was really interesting, then I had these friends who came around me and said, well, welcome to the party. You know, if you're going to be a known quantity online, guess what? This is part of the game. Yeah. And on some level, once I kind of realized that, I went, oh, okay, that's helpful. You know, kind of get through the little psychological moment. And then I realized I'm actually still here. And I'm not hearing a whole bunch of that other stuff. And it's that's where I look at the long tail of this conversation is, I think it will shake out. And there'll be bumps, things you can't always control. New technologies will emerge. But will the creative make the decision to create something new despite all that?
Yeah, okay. We're cutting.
I just to that point that I was talking to Chase Jarvis about that, and he was saying, if people aren't talking about me and giving me crap, that means I haven't been doing enough to be seen well enough.
Okay. Cut. So I think we've established that there is no answer, yes or no. It's both. I would think I want to come out of this with some sort of thing for people, a lesson for people to go home with. So what I'd really like is for each person, briefly, to go down the line and talk about, we've talked about many of the challenges. One thing we didn't touch on, so if someone can't think of it, I'd like someone to address how the rapid fire shooting technique has changed things, and maybe, so basically mentioning one thing that technology has done that's been maybe detrimental and how we can overcome that. So for example, rapid fire. Not really consciously thinking about your shots and just shooting. So maybe every once in a while doing an exercise where you're only giving yourselves 12 shots to shoot something. You know, so this is just a brainstorm. But going down the line, or we can go randomly, whoever's ready first, saying, hey, this could be a problem with technology, but here's how we're going to overcome it. Because I think we all agree technology is awesome. I mean, that's the reason. Photography, I love technology. I love digital. But how can we?
What if that answer was actually the right answer for almost every option? Like the rapid fire thing. I think your answer is great. Set a limiting exercise where you're going to try something new that seems out of the ordinary. It seems like that kind of application could work in a pretty much every new technology that emerges. If you get addicted to it in a certain kind of way and you're overusing it in that kind of way. Like the
so that's Dane's. Passion.
No, that's actually yours. It's actually yours, actually, is the limiting. I think it's really smart.
Yeah, but how, you know, minimizing the negative and letting the positive flourish. So who's ready? Tamara.
Sure, I'm completely ready.
I picked you because you're so quick.
Right. And I'm showing that right now. So you're saying to come up with, just summarize the summary.
Yeah, I'm trying to get this in there too.
What's that?
No.
No, do you want to do it? Let's do it at the same time.
No.
Go.
You
think
that people
are
very friendly,
friendly
when they
play with
technology.
Oh, you're going to answer that differently. So I think from the perspective of where technology might be a menace and how we can overcome it, which was the question, because I was completely paying attention and not looking at my iPhone just then. I think that rapid fire shooting, I don't have to answer that one, right?
No, okay, you're going to come up with your own.
Okay, I'm going to do that right now. Right, Greg?
Hey, Cliff, why don't you start?
Thank God.
Tamara's Sue's ready. Well, Tamara, you disappoint.
I'll go. I mean, there's a tremendous amount of information that's available. And I used to tell people, you know, in my workshops, you know, one of the advantages that I had as a news photographer was I got to work on a staff of creative people, and I was exposed to creative people every day. I had a third-party objective editor that was looking at my work and giving me criticism and feedback every day. And so for the new photographer, there's so much information available on the web. You know, you can go online and you can see other people's styles and you can see how they approach a shoot and just get good information. And I think that's the positive of it. But on the other side of it, it also sort of encourages copycatting, you know, and just sort of seeing an image and trying to emulate it. And so what I would like for people to take away is to use that information and be a sponge and get as much as you can and find the things that work for you, but at the same time develop your own style. And don't just be a copycat of what you see on the internet on somebody else's website.
Yeah. Sue?
I compete in the awards, which has no bearing on my business. I don't believe my clients care whether I have 50 golds, but I do it because it's 20-something... 23. Because I don't have that many.
Yeah,
here's a wall. But I just think it's creative masturbation. But it's so. But that's okay. But what I'm saying to you is,
yeah.
No, awards are why I like it.
Yeah,
myself. But people always ask me, how do you win so many awards? And I said, well, when I was beginning, I went to a master. And they said, what do you mean? And I said, I went to an award-winning master of 20 years, and I said, mentor me. And I won awards from my very first awards, and I'm still winning them now. If you want to learn to be a master, go to one.
So you're going to get a lot of calls? You're going to get a lot of calls now?
Call me.
Also, Sue's open to dating somebody very handsome, just so you know.
I'm a Gemini. I'm kind of shy, wild.
I say, obviously, embrace the technology. Use what was obvious to you. You trust your instinct, but don't forget the humanity in everything. I recently received a letter of a thank you from a student from a workshop. I also had someone that I just suggested to go to see this company, and I received a letter, and I'm like, that was just such a beautiful thing. It made it. That is what stood out from me rather than getting an email. The humanity of not spending 3 hours of everyday social networking, spend it with your loved ones. You know, for me, it's do it for business, but shut the damn door. You know what I mean? Put the computer down, turn the phone off, and it's okay. You will survive, you know? So for me, it's all about the humanity.
Yeah. In terms of something as simple as sales, I talk a lot about whatever your work is, whatever you're shooting, you are most likely in a 100% commission job here. You are in a 100% commission job, which means that the only way you fund that you're doing this further is that you can sell the work in whatever capacity you sell it. And in that respect, I think that you can bring in all these technologies to dazzle your clients.
That's a great word.
Thank you. You can dazzle them through a sound light show and a this and a that, and you can send them a link and have all that. But I believe at the end of the day, when it comes to actually selling the work, you need to be able to remove everything that distracts the client from seeing and feeling the impact of your imagery. And that is when you get into sales. That's when you get into the point where you're actually moving this product, whether it's commercial or fashion or wedding or portraits, you're moving it to that person where they believe in you, they see your vision, they can feel the impact of your work, and they want to buy from you. And I think in many ways, removing technology gets you farther along down that path. Yeah, it was immediate. It just came right away to me.
I'll just on the technology note, I think respecting the craft is something that I just want to carry that torch. And people ask me, do you let people locally come to your workshop? And I say yes, and they're surprised to hear that because I can teach people how to see light. I can teach people how to use this technology. This latest technology with the D800 and D4, and it's just getting so intricate and so involved. But I can teach them how to do that, but I can't give them my eye. And I think those that are just beginning and those that are really enhancing their skill set with this new technology, I think in the case of someone like Jeremy, who's fairly, you're a fairly new photographer, and Lindsay, and you guys have just stormed the scene because your vision is different. You're creative, and yet you've embraced the technology as well. So Greg and myself, we're analog guys in digital worlds. I mean, if we didn't evolve, we wouldn't be here right now. So no matter how good the technology is, the vision still has to be there, is really all I want to say.
I can add to that. That's my whole thing is vision and the craft, like he's saying. I touched on what Jerry touched on, the family thing. I think technology is awesome. I'm a huge fan, but I agree. Put the phone down, escape, get away from it all. But you guys are wedding industry. We're probably talking to a lot of wedding industry. And one thing that
talking
I...
Talking to techies, too.
Yeah.
Come shoot a wedding?
True.
Come shoot a wedding.
Well, what I was getting at, this applies to anybody, but I'd say to the wedding industry, quit looking at each other so much. Start looking at advertising and editorial. Look outside. I even tell some students sometimes to trash all your bookmarks. Stop looking at Jose's blog every day. Stop looking at all the things you look at. Yeah. But change up
look
what
at
you...
Jeremy Cowart.
No. But you know what I mean? Like, change your daily routine. I heard a phrase that said, happiness is enjoying the detour. Change up your daily routine, change your bookmarks, start looking outside of your industry, and once you start discovering new things, you'll be inspired, and thus your work will get better.
Okay, I'm just going to piggyback on the inspiration for my, kind of what I want to contribute. Everything that a photographer, this might be controversial, but not exactly, everything that a photographer needs to be a good photographer is already within them. It's within the person that makes them a good photographer. It's finding what you teach or whatever, inspiration you give and using it to pull that out of yourself, if that makes sense. It's not anything that you can give me that will make me a better photographer. It's not anything technically that you teach me. It's how I take that information and pull it out of myself. And so I approach the same thing for everything in technology. That light that I just purchased, Jerry,
the light that you purchased.
I don't know.
What was the website that you could buy it on?
That's right.
Icelight.com.
But it's not that piece of equipment that makes me a better photographer. It's maybe how it inspires me to be a better photographer. And that's what it all comes down to. So that is technology. The technology only made me better because it inspired me to be better. And the same thing with how you would use Twitter or Facebook. You know what? Twitter and Facebook, you can use it to grow your business, but it's an extension of you. It's how you relate to people, how you show your personality, how you engage with others. So every piece of technology that exists out there, it's not making you a better photographer. It's allowing you to reach within inside yourself. So that's kind of how I picture it. Technology has to be an extension of you in order for it to do you any good whatsoever.
Okay. Are we good? We're good. All right. So I think that concludes our first WPPI/TwitPhoto collaboration. Let's everyone give a round of applause.
Great job, Catherine, putting this together.
I want to thank
you. Can we talk about metadata next year?
Nestops.
JPEG versus RAW or Canon versus Nikon.
All right, I'm losing the crowd. Behave. But I'm super excited for WPPI and TWIT for supporting this and for all their contribution to education. And I actually wanted to end this session. I want to thank all of you guys. I know how busy you are at this convention. And so taking the time to be here means a lot to me, every single one of you. You were hand-selected.
Catherine, can I interrupt? I know you're going to say the last thing, and I want to say one thing before the last thing.
Yes.
I think it's really important.
Only if it's about me and it's really nice.
It actually is, you know, shocker. Yeah, yeah. Well, just a sense of, and not just you, I think Leo too. I think the fact that Twit is committed to photography as a technology and that they're willing to, given the audience that they have and raise it up and have someone like you, I think your face on this program is very significant and it's important in where our industry is going. Because one of the things that we didn't get a chance to talk about today because it wasn't on topic is where is our industry going and what new terrain will that take us? And there's no question it'll have something to do with This Week in Technology. And for you leading the charge and for you inviting us on behalf of the group, I just want to say thanks.
Thank you so much. Well done. If anyone else has anything to add in that regard.
You're looking gorgeous.
Your dress is just beautiful.
Yes. Thank you. Okay, so you brought up Seth Godin, so I'm just going to piggyback you. I have a quote that we're going to end with. And I'm going to look down because I can't memorize things. Every digital tool in the world is easily available, often for free. Alas, the only access that's harder than ever is access to the part of your brain that's willing to take advantage of all of this. And scene. So this is Twit Photo. No, I'm kidding. No, thank you so much for joining us in Vegas. And you guys, everyone give a... This is really cheesy.